Hello there. You are about ready to listen to a very special sneak peek of our Patreon-exclusive show, Spider-Versity, where Sal from Comic Pop and myself dive deep into the Spider-Man movies. If you would like to join us for the rest of our Spider-Verse-spanning journey, exploring movies like the original trilogy, Spider-Man's 1, 2, and 3, and The Amazing Spider-Man, be sure to head on over to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers and become a patron today. Now on with the show. My goodness. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome back to Spider-Versity. We are here to talk about whole new Spider-Man. It's a brand new world.
Yes.
Here to talk about Tom Holland, Spider-Man. And what's cool about this, originally, for those that don't know, originally when I pitched this to Sal, the goal was to do all of the mainline Spider-Man movies before No Way Home. And yep. Then... they ended up being chunkier than I anticipated. And so we spread them out. But the good thing about this is that now, like the previous Spider-Mans, we get to look at this beginning with context of where we're going.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the full, as of right now, we've got the full picture of Tom Holland's Spider-Man journey going into this. So for those just joining us, this is our exclusive Patreon show, Spider-Versity. We may be dropping this episode for free on the mainline show. If you're like, where can I hear part two, where you're talking about, or the episodes where you talk about Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire, you can do that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. My name is DJ Wooldridge. With me, as always, is Sal. Sal, hi.
Hey, everybody. What's up?
For those that don't know, where can they find you?
You can find me exclusively on youtube.com/comicpop or anywhere else Comic Pop is found. So it's not really that exclusive, but it's still pretty great. So join us there.
Please go check it out. There are links in the description. If you're watching the video version of this, I feel like the thumbnail behind Sal, is that the Superman red and blue logo?
It is, but I doctored it because we covered a story that uses the Superman blue logo for his Elseworlds son. And so I was like, oh, this will be a...
Using the thinky parts right there.
I can get two bites of the apple if I use that artifact but change the colors.
Oh, my God. Yes. I remember it's so funny when you like I went back and like read Grant Morrison's Justice League run. Iconic.
Yes.
But it's funny how he just has to deal with Superman Blue in the middle of
It's so shoehorned, and he's like, well, that's comics.
Yeah, whatever. It. And it's one of those, when you give something like that to a master like Grant Morrison, they just make it work. And you think, it almost makes you think, oh, maybe that was a good idea. It wasn't. It's just...
Nope.
You put it in the hands of the right creator, they could just make anything not seem shitty.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's not what we're talking about.
No,
we're talking
Spider-Man.
About Spider-Man Homecoming, released in 2017, in the halcyon days of 2017. That's why we're still the Trump presidency when that was going on. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This doesn't matter.
I got married in 2017, so I have a good partner for that year.
This is a good year. 2017 is a
great
good year.
For me, yeah.
The synopsis for this movie is Peter Parker balances his life as an ordinary high school student in Queens with a superhero alter ego Spider-Man and finds himself on the trail of a new menace prowling the skies of New York City. That's actually a really good synopsis.
That sounds like a synopsis of the first movie.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does. They're all the same movie. Let's get down to the brass tacks. They're all the same movie. This is on Rotten Tomatoes. This has a 92% with an audience score of 87%. Which is wild. It's such a weird, especially for an MCU movie, usually audience scores are a little bit higher. But again, I know we do Rotten Tomatoes every one of these shows. It literally doesn't matter.
Meaningless.
But yeah, the way it aggregates it, it's like...
No, but it's worth... it's worth looking at.
Yeah, it's like an artifact is why we share it here. Yes. But it's basically the way it aggregates is like you could have given it like a B minus and it's like that's a plus and it goes to its score. So it's whatever. It's functionally meaningless other than an artifact of how people felt about it.
Yep.
The critics' consensus is Spider-Man Homecoming does whatever a second reboot can. Whatever the hell that means. Delivering a colorful, fun adventure that fits snugly in the sprawling MCU without getting bogged down in franchise building. This movie was directed by John Watts, who prior to this had done such hits as Clown and Cop Car. I have not seen Clown. I did, when he was announced for this, I did watch Cop Car. It's fine.
Right. Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, as I understand it, John Watts' career has always been like just kind of like, he's fine.
Yeah. Yes. And that trend continues into his Spider-Man movies.
I will say, you know, watching this movie in the context of No Way Home, I was like, oh my God, is John Watts great? Because I'm watching him like bring callbacks and shades of his previous... I'm like, There's a lot in here where I'm like, oh my God, I may have actually judged John Watts a little too harshly.
I did not feel that way revisiting this movie, but we will get into it. That'll be a good discussion to have. And this movie was written by, buckle up, kids, Jonathan Goldstein, John Francis Daley, John Watts, Christopher Ford, Chris McKenna, and Eric Sommers.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
So there's like six drafts of this movie?
Yes. And there's people. Definitely, we'll get into it. The MCU Spider-Man movies, I feel like, overall, are pretty good. They definitely do feel like there are definitely a lot of cooks in this kitchen. There's Kevin Feige and the Marvel people and Amy Pascal and the Sony people and the writers and the directors, and all of them have notes. And I don't know that any of these movies quite congeal into a cohesive idea, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Before we dive into Homecoming proper, we should note that this is not Tom Holland's first appearance as Spider-Man. That is actually in Captain America Civil War. I will admit that the idea briefly fluttered across my brain that maybe we should talk about Civil War. And that's nonsense. All right. We're not going to be talking about Civil War or Infinity War or Endgame, because Spider-Man is maybe like 10 minutes of each of those movies. And they're each 3 hours long. So we're not doing
about
that.
Him.
Yeah, they're not about him. So we're not going to talk about him. However, I did want to take a second to talk about the scene at Civil War, because one, Captain America: Civil War is still one of my favorite MCU movies.
It's great.
And two, Peter Parker's scenes in it are basically perfect, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's a great introduction to this character. Sal, do you remember sitting in the theater when the big words "Queens" popped up on the screen?
Jubilation in the theater. I remember myself included. I was just so thrilled. Obviously, we all knew he was going to be in it. I wish I didn't. I wish there had never been a trailer. I was so hyped for the trailer, by the way. I was so thrilled to see Spider-Man in the trailer.
Yes.
But now I wish there had never been one, and I was just had been like so surprised to see Queens, because they that title sting was such a great convention they put in this movie, and I'm convinced it's just to do that,
just to deliver this moment. I think you're probably right. This also reminds me. Did Thor Ragnarok come out the same year, 2017?
Oh,
or was it 2018?
I think it was 2018.
Well,
but
I remember you talk about the trailers. It's similar when you watch Thor Ragnarok and you're like, oh shit, I wish I didn't know Hulk was in this, because the way they lay the seeds out to the reveal is actually really good if you didn't know. But of course, we all knew going
in.
No,
he's in it. Yeah.
But it is interesting how Marvel gets away with this revealing something that we all know, and yet we all still lose our minds, even though we all know. We all...
Yep.
Know it's going to happen. But you're right, the theater erupted. I think for me it took me by surprise, because I actually was really invested in what the Civil War was doing, that I'd kind of forgotten that, like, oh, this is coming.
So
that moment happens. We get Tony stopping by Peter's apartment, and the writers behind that team that went from Winter Soldier to Civil War to Infinity War and Endgame are really good at doing what, like, the best, like, superhero cartoons do, like Justice League Unlimited and Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes. We're distilling a character down to their core elements, so like within like minutes you're like, oh, I know who this person is and I know how they fit into what's happening.
Yep, and we cut out anything that might be superfluous or that we know already.
Yes.
Like, legitimately, Tony Stark asks him how he gets his powers, and he starts to tell the story, and he goes, I don't care, never mind. Like, moves on to the next thing.
Yes.
Because we know.
Yeah, and he also, like, the when they ask him why he does what he does, and he's like, if you can do what I do and you don't, that's when the bad things happen. Really effectively implying Uncle Ben and working around it. I will say that in particular, but a lot of here, does lay the seeds for some of the problems of Tom Holland's, because we still, three movies in, we still don't have an answer to the whole Uncle Ben of it all, whether he even fucking exists.
Yeah. Well, what if answer that question, because he literally name drops Uncle Ben in the What If episode, but does that count? Right.
Yeah, it doesn't count. And also we see the suitcase in Far From Home getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But then there's things in No Way Home where it seems like, wait, does he not exist?
Yeah, like, because he doesn't flinch when the other Spider-Men talk about Uncle Ben. It's interesting. It's a weird dynamic. Homecoming seems to imply Uncle Ben as well.
Yes, and we'll get into that. But I did want to, again, and we'll get to the Homecoming.
He doesn't say the mantra in this movie. He says, like, he does the Amazing Spider-Man route where he says something like it.
Yes. Yeah, I like it. And then we get it, and again, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but we get in No Way Home, but and his response when May says it is, I know. So it's like, does that know as in I've experienced these things, or is it I know because I remember Uncle Ben saying that?
Right.
And I guess we'll have to wait for Spider-Man freshman year to get the lowdown on that.
Right.
Anyway, super cool. Captain America Civil War appearance in that is super cool. Yeah, it's a great introduction to the character. I will also say on some level, it is kind of a shame that we weren't able to, that the Andrew Garfield movies were bad and that he didn't get to be segued in there, because the one benefit we would have gotten from that is that we've established him as Spider-Man. He's Spider-Man, and there's not a chance that his journey as Spider-Man will get entirely derailed by Iron Man and the Avengers, which is kind of what happens in this movie.
Well, or it will, but it's okay because he's already been Spider-Man for so long.
Yeah, we've already gotten that, so now we're seeing a different flavor.
I mean, we are seeing a different flavor, but it's a different flavor for the beginning years of this character. So it's kind of a shame. Yes, I agree. And I remember there being debate about whether, like, Andrew Garfield was going to be used, whether Sony was going to reboot with a new Spider-Man, and, like, they were going to, like, let MCU have Andrew Garfield Spider-Man because they didn't care about him anymore.
Yeah.
I was okay with anything, although the Civil War scene sold me 100% on Tom Holland. I loved his portrayal, his chemistry with Robert Downey Jr., his interaction with Aunt May, the fact that we threw away the Forest Hills house, but all right, fine, they're in this apartment, but, like, it's more real. He's a dumpster diver. And his confidence comes when he is Spider-Man, like when he just finally, like, he has the web shooter and he hits Tony Stark with it and he just says, don't tell Aunt May. It's the first time he actually stands, like, toe-to-toe with Iron Man. Great moment.
Yeah, great moment. And it is worth noting, you're right, in that scene, it is a great showcase of, oh, this is why you cast Tom Holland. Like, this kid is killing it. He's doing great, and he does great in this movie as well. And that's our segue into Homecoming proper.
Yep.
We don't start with Spider-Man, though. We start with Mr. Michael Keaton as Adrian Toomes, as he talks to Tinker, whose real name is Phineas Mason. I'm going to call him
Mason.
Yeah, Phineas Mason. I'm going to call him Tinker. It's going to get a little dicey when we get into the Shockers, but we'll figure that out in a second.
Sure.
And Toomes shows Tinker a drawing his daughter did of the Avengers, and he's a proud papa. He thinks it's great. It's not, but that's okay. We're going to move on. She's a kid. It doesn't matter. So we are at the aftermath of the battle for New York, the Avengers taking down the Chitauri, and Toomes and his team were introduced to Schultz and Jackson, the Shockers, in the future, and they have been contracted by the city to take down the alien tech, and they're going at it with, like, they're basically going at it with, like, hammers and stuff. They're like, who knows what this stuff is? Let's figure it out.
We're taking it out. We're moving it out. Like, we'll deal with it with a fine-tooth comb when it gets back to the warehouse, but for now, our job is to clear this street.
Yes.
I'm like, that for me, all of this scene, I was like at the edge of my seat. I've been waiting for this movie since Andrew Garfield's reboot. Like, since 20, because The Amazing Spider-Man is in the same year as the MCU has already been established. So I'm like, why isn't this in the MCU?
Yeah.
When Giacchino's score of the Amazing Spider-Man, of the Spider-Man theme song played over the Marvel logo, I got misty.
Yeah,
I was like, it's happening. Like, I'm in the theater. I'm watching this happen. I am going to get Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe as he should be. Here we go. Then we get into this. Boom. Avengers Tower. Boom. Chitauri dead monsters and damage control.
Yes.
And I'm like, hell yes.
Yep. We get Tyne Daly as Anne Marie Hoag from Damage Control. Wasn't there supposed to be a Damage Control show?
I want to say there was, but maybe we're getting that confused with that other show with Alan Tudyk from DC. I don't know. There's a lot of, like, conflicting reports about what they were going to do with Damage Control, or at the very least what they were going to do with, like, TV shows. And especially back then when they were making Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they had that Marvel's Most Wanted idea that was never going to happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe, but thank God they didn't, because it would have been non-canon. It would have been thrown away.
Yes.
And it would have been, like, half as good as it could have been if they'd done a Disney Plus show.
Yeah. So, but anyway, this is where we get Damage Control. And we've not only introduced Damage Control, we're introduced to, basically our entire crew of thieves that will become our antagonists later. And Damage Control takes over, and we find out that they are it's a government deal with Stark Industries, and this will also begin the theme of our villains making very cogent points that the movie has no idea what to do with, with Schultz being like, wait, so they make the mess, and then they also get paid to clean it up, and it's like, it's funny watching this movie now. It's like, wait, are they right? Like, this whole movie, I'm like, wait, I actually think I'm Team Tombs on this entirely. Yeah.
I like it because he is a real villain. Yes. He believes he's right, you get his motivation, but I think it's a little more subtle than it could have been, where if you don't think about it too hard, he's entirely sympathetic and I get it. But at the same time, like, by the time he gets to the end and he's talking to Peter about like guys like us, I'm like, you live in a mansion. You drive a Jaguar.
Tombs? Yeah.
We're not the same guy anymore, man. Like, and you got rich off of theft. That's not the same thing. Now, I like the idea of Damage Control being a subsidiary, or at the very least, like, maybe they were a thing, and then Stark bought them and used them. This is still him trying to make up for Civil War. Like, this is him being like, okay, so obviously, like, I don't want to be Iron Man anymore. I feel personally responsible for like the Sokovia Accords, for the fallout with Cap, also for the deaths that took place in Wakanda. Like, I feel bad about all this stuff. Damage Control is his effort. Like, it's Tony Stark, so it's obviously egotistical, and it's obviously gonna like net him profit, but it's also this thing where he's like, this is all I know how to do to make this right. Like, I'm footing the bill. We could have gotten like the city to pay contractors, but the city shouldn't have to pay for it. I'm paying for it. And kind of cool, but he doesn't think about the fact that it screws over Tombs.
I do think you've touched on a low-key, unintentional theme of the MCU, is that it doesn't really matter the good Tony Stark does. Tony Stark existing is just kind of a problem. Like, we shouldn't have Tony Starks is the answer to the question.
Yes.
But anyway, Endgame does that for us. They're cleaning up, Tinker makes a little cool hover device foreshadowing things to come, and we get it right away. Vulture says the world's changing, it's time to change too. Big card.
Yeah.
8 years later, which we now know is just incorrect. It's just incorrect, and we haven't bothered to... I think if I were Feige, I would have gone back and been like, oh, no, because there's a line, too, later that says
he literally says 8 years, and I'm like, nope, it's four. You're just wrong. Like,
it's just wrong. It's just incorrect.
And I can't believe how wrong they were. Like, I don't know who screwed that up or who continues to let it be screwed up, but it's just wrong. Like, you mean to tell me that instead of it being... that it's 4 years after the Battle of New York, it's actually 3 years in the future? Like, because are you telling me that Homecoming takes place in 2020?
Yes.
Like, that's what they're trying to say, and it's just, the timelines don't match up.
At first, I thought, when I first saw it in the theater, I was like, I guess because I know, like, at the time I knew that Iron Man 2, Hulk, and Thor all took place in the same week. So it's like, maybe Avengers takes place the next week, like, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, you know what I mean? And it's not until we, and then I thought about, but then you get into the Civil War and stuff, Vision says, where that timeline, it's wild how wrong it is.
Oh, yeah. And how correctable it is, and how, like, how publicly and glaringly they got it wrong, and how they just, at this point, it's just blind defiance. Yes. Just this refusal to just go in, just go in and change it to four.
Change
it's
it to
hard.
Four, or get rid of the year card
just
altogether.
Get rid of it entirely.
Even after I looked up to see if I could get like a direct answer, and of course, like, Kevin Feige deflected the shit out of it, and now it's just not a thing. But he even mentions in the thing, he's like, yeah, you know, we try to not specifically mention years, and it's like, yeah, this is why. And this is why comics don't do it, and this is why you shouldn't do that shit.
Right. Except for Endgame, where it's literally, it's dependent on it.
Yes.
You need to, they constantly reference years.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So anyway, in this time, Tomb's operation has grown. He's got employees. He's got a whole, they probably got 401ks. They probably got healthcare.
Oh, yeah.
It's a whole thing. And we see him land in the Vulture armor, and I gotta say, fucking Vulture looks cool as shit. You all will learn listening to these episodes. I have plenty of issues with these movies. One I don't have is the way they utilize villains like Vulture and Mysterio and update them in ways that are true to the character, but also fucking cool.
Yep, his plumage collar is dope.
the plumage, because it's a flight jacket, and then the mask, which is like a flight suit,
and
the
it has
idea
like a little vulture face on. It's great.
Making him a scavenger, somebody that's which is true to the vulture thing, because as a kid, the only time vulture was vaguely interesting was there was a point where he actually like sucked the youth from people like a vampire.
He was a vampire.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, I guess that's the best you can do with vulture. It's like, no, this is the thing. This is great. This is really good.
Yep.
Cool.
Agreed.
And then we get one of the best parts of this movie, which is a film by Peter Parker. This is where you talk about we get the Marvel fanfare with the Spider-Man theme.
Yep.
And this is a recap, essentially, to flesh out and set up, establish Civil War for the one person that I guess didn't see Civil War before this movie.
I think they just want to make it like, how does it fit? Like, how does
where
this fit?
When does it take place? And so we get he's filming leading up to it. We find out this is his first time on a plane, which is a great detail. We also see in a bit of foreshadowing that there's no pilot to the plane, which is also, if I'm being honest, very creepy. I don't care that it's auto. Just have a dude sitting there.
You need a guy in there. I mean, that's very Iron Man, but like, and I think that's been up there since Iron Man 2.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's still. I don't care who invented it.
Yes, don't do it. And so it is interesting. Peter in the scene very pointedly says no one's told him why he's there, which is wild to me.
Yeah. Yeah, just you're going to Germany. See you later. And he said something about Captain America. Ah, Cap went crazy. You got to go to Germany.
Yeah. Okay. This is the moment where you start getting – there's little moments like you're like, oh, yeah, his involvement in Civil War doesn't actually make sense. I love it, but it doesn't really make any sense. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's a little bit of a stretch is he's actually filming during the Civil War fight. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't work. I mean, also his "Hey everyone" is like timed differently. Like, yeah, he says "Hey everyone" in the trailer that way, but he doesn't actually say it until much later.
Yeah.
But they timed it wrong. In any case, that whole sequence is cute and fun. The spider suit looks very fake in the film by Peter Parker scene, and in a couple of other sequences throughout the movie.
Yeah,
and it's.
One of my issues with Spider-Man in Civil War is, and of course now we live in the future, we know they had a spider suit, and they just CG'd over it. And I think this is one of those issues where the amount of people that need to, because of the Sony Marvel aspect of it, the amount of people that need to sign off on something, there feels like there's a lot of elements that get pushed off till the very last minute, including the design of the spider suit. And you're right. I was looking forward to coming in this movie. It's like, okay, the suit was entirely CG in Civil War, but now he's got a whole movie and it'll be better. And it's hit or miss.
Yeah, it's hit or miss. But when it hits hard. I love the Homecoming suit. I love the design. And when it's
totally
in person,
agreed.
It's great.
Yeah, totally agreed. I think the Homecoming design is if not my favorite design, one of my favorite Spider-Man designs, which is the bummer of the CG of it, because it's like the actual design of it, it's really solid. It's really good.
Right. And when it looks like a cartoon, it's a shame, but it's one of those things that I always say about when it comes to CG in a story that I'm engaged in. I was watching this movie literally last night with my wife, and I was so engrossed in the story that like my brain was like, that looks really cartoony, and I'm like, yeah, but I'm still invested in the story. Like, I don't care. You know, and Marvel really banks on that. Like, Marvel counts on that.
Hard.
Disney Marvel does that a lot, where they're like, you better just be invested in the story, because we've pretty much stopped trying when it comes to certain CG elements. And
and especially, and again, I don't know if it's because, like, my co-host Roxy and I on the main show were talking about Phase 4, and I don't know if it's because literally in 1 year of Phase 4, we got 9 different Marvel projects, or if it's because most of those were filmed during COVID.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like, oh, these actors are not in the same room. Obviously not in the same room.
Yeah. And that's a real damn shame.
Yeah. On the ride home after the whole Civil War fight, we finally get our first appearance of Tony, and it is interesting looking at this. It's like, oh yeah, that's the Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark dominates whatever scene, like literally whatever scene he's in. So it's like the idea of having this movie, it's like it was going to be a challenge just because, again, there's a reason. There's not only a reason that Iron Man is the foundation of the MCU. There's a reason that the Iron Man movies have always done better than the Iron Man comics. And it's because of Robert Downey Jr.
Yes. But Iron Man / Tony Stark in this movie, I know that a lot of people are really critical of it, and I know that like this is the beginning of the Iron Man Jr. nonsense, which I don't really subscribe to and I don't really care for, because I'm like, well, you got, what, five other movies with Spider-Man in them? Not mm-hmm. including the animated one, which is the perfect film. Like, let's have one where it's his mentor's Iron Man. But in this, Peter and Toomes are paralleled because both of them get screwed over by Tony Stark's hubris. Mm-hmm. And it's like, kind of remarkable how Tony doesn't, like, Tony thinks he's doing the right thing in both instances. He's like, mm-hmm. I'm going to take over the cleanup of New York, and I screwed over this guy without thinking about it. I'm going to mentor this superhero because I need one, because the Avengers is literally me and a robot, and I need, like, a superhero on my freaking team. But I don't think about him day to day, and I just, like, I don't think about the impact of a fatherless child and what that will do to him. Yes. So, like, he leaves Peter a wreck. When he leaves, and that shot of him just standing there, and the car goes, like, that hard cut is so funny. It's a great, like, laugh sting, but it's also this, like, gut punch, because, like, Peter believes everything he says. So Peter's like, yeah, and obviously it's played for laughs, and we're enjoying the fact that, like, he's texting Happy all the time. But, like, that is what Stark does to him. He abandons him until he needs him. And mm-hmm. when he becomes a problem, he deals with it like Iron Man and not like a human being. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, really neat that they did that. And they don't, like, tell you. They just show you through film. And I'm like, that's a movie. Like, way to go.
So, yes, like you said, he says that we'll call you. He pointedly says that he's not an Avenger. And I do like the transition from the home video to Spider-Man, like, oh, you're letting me keep the suit?
Yes.
And, which is a great transition, but also we'll get to the one of my main issues with the movies, that goddamn fucking, we spent so much goddamn time on that fucking suit. I don't give a shit about the suit.
Right. I will also say, just I don't know if it's because media has changed, but, like, the film by Peter Parker, I remember in the theater, it was, like, it was a little jarring to watch a cell phone footage mm-hmm. for that long.
Yeah.
Watching it again, it was seamless. Like, mm-hmm. I was invested in the Peter Parker, like, cell phone movie.
Yeah.
And when it transitioned, it was such a soft transition that I was like, wow, like, I guess media has changed to the point where I'm used to seeing that kind of thing on TV.
Yeah.
It was a really cool transition where I'm like, this is a little bit ahead of its time, where it was mm-hmm. actually able to go, like, no, people will watch a cell phone movie for 4 minutes.
Yeah. And so now we cut forward 2 months later, a lot of time jumping in here. Peter is still texting Happy, because Peter cannot, no matter what version of Peter it is, that the boy can't take a hint.
No.
he arrives at Midtown High. He's almost hit by a Flash car. Introduction of friend of the show, Tony Revolori. And this is clearly a nerd school, because when he walks in, everyone's carrying on, like, weird science projects and shit.
Yeah, it's a science academy. That's the idea, is it's a science school. I was like, that's a neat idea. I've seen that before. I think Miles in the comics goes to a science academy. Like,
yeah, like a magnet school, right?
A magnet school, like that. It's like, you know, if you know you're going to be into science, you spend 4 years in high school doing science. I'm like,
yeah, because
really?
We all know exactly who we're going to be
Yeah,
in
at
high
14,
school.
We all know what we're going to do and what we're going to be.
That's not the only thing this movie's going to take from Miles. We're introduced to Ned, a.k.a. Genki. He petitions Peter to build his Lego Death Star, which that'll haunt these movies for the foreseeable future. This is a nerd school, but it does have cheerleaders, and they do make fun of them.
Yeah, what? It's a weird like school.
They're nerd cheerleaders. Yeah. Also, it is weird because they have the cheerleaders that make fun of them, but also, hands down, the hottest girl in school is heading up the academic decathlon.
Yes. Well, listen, I have seen, like, actual, like, private schools where, like, the big thing is the academics or the, like, extracurriculars. Hell, I was watching a movie. It was Teen Wolf. I was watching Teen Wolf the other day.
The original Michael J. Fox.
The original, not the show. Yeah. But in that movie, it presupposes the concept that if you're in the theater, you're really cool. And that's a coveted position, is having a role in the theater. And I was like, what? Like, you know, oh, and he plays basketball and he's a loser.
Yeah, and what, like, a loser. Wait, when? Well, and again, that goes back. I think the entire premise of the 21 Jump Street movie is the idea that, like, hey, social dynamics have changed in high school. It's not necessarily just a jock or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway.
But what a weird school this is.
So yeah, Peter says he can't hang out with Ned because of the Stark internship, which is code for being Spider-Man.
Yep.
A little unclear about whether Tony is, like, giving him a stipend to do Spider-Man stuff.
No, I think it's a cover story. I think it's actually, I loved the Stark internship because it was a way better excuse that is still read the same way by the supporting cast. He's like, I got to go Stark internship. And they're like, you have other important things to do, but I get why you're doing it, but I still am going to judge you for it. And I'm like, that's really cool.
Sorry, say what you're going to say.
Just the Stark internship is not being arrested via the Sokovia Accords.
Yeah, 100%. And so we get our first introduction to Liz, who's walking down the hall in the classic slow-mo, googly eyes. In class, Flash answers a question wrong that Peter gets right. And this kind of, I feel like this is mostly just to establish that he gets the nickname Flash because he always wants to be first, and it doesn't mean he's always right.
Mm-hmm.
We see that Peter makes his web fluid in chemistry class, which seems very impressive. Like, how does he get it into the... He, like, stirs it and it starts webbing out. It's like, how do you get it into the thing?
I assume that's like test phasing, where it's like, if it reacts, then I know to...
I know this is the right thing. Peter and Ned talk about Liz's clothes, like the is that a new top she's wearing?
Yeah, I've never heard, like, of that, but okay.
Yeah, and thankfully Zendaya's Michelle's there to call them out on it. She very specifically says here she doesn't have friends.
Yep.
Which will be something we discuss later. And Peter tells Martin Starr, who plays a teacher, who I guess is supposed to be, I think the story
the
is he's supposed to be the guy from, well, it's weird because he's supposed to be the same guy from Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
But also, cell phone guy from Shang-Chi is in this movie, and the two characters have different names.
Right.
So, whatever.
Is
also why, don't give years, also random characters like that, don't give them names, because then maybe they can be the same guy in Shang-Chi.
Yeah. Hell, they did this. That's not the only example in this movie where the principal was on the Howling Commandos and they went like, oh, right. And you know they just went, oh, oops. And then they went, oh, to fix it, we'll just put his picture as the Howling Commando on the desk and say he's an identical grandpa.
Like, yes.
Okay.
We all have our identical grandpas.
Yeah, looking at my grandpa, I looked exactly like him.
Exactly, 100%. They're talking about the nationals for the decathlon.
Yep.
With Martin Starr, and he's like, "Oh, I can't go because of what the Stark internship." And this is where we learn Michelle knows all the extracurriculars he drops. We're subtly dropping that she's into him.
Yeah.
And after school, Peter straight up spider jumps over a fence because I guess he doesn't give a shit about his secret identity. Just does not give a fuck.
He's just so excited. I love this this image of Peter who just can't wait to get through school just so he can be Spider-Man.
Yes.
And it's not because he wants to be like, he's lost his mission. His mission was like, I have to help people because, you know, Uncle Ben. Now it's like, I have to be Spider-Man because Tony may call me today.
Yeah.
To be an Avenger.
After 2 months.
Yeah. But I love that. That's such a kid, man. 2 months is is an eternity.
Yeah, exactly. So I would have thought he would have gotten the memo at this point.
No way. He wants to believe. He's wearing Stark Tech every day.
Peter trades barbs with who I'm going to call Bodega Guy. That is a bodega, right? We don't really do the bodega thing in L.A. Yeah. Okay, cool. Peter changes into Spider-Man, and the weird detail that weirded me out, he just straight chucks it. He's like, fuck these shoes, and he throws them down the alley. It's like, wait, are you not going to pick those back up?
Because he puts everything else together, but the shoes, no. Maybe he's just like, I've learned over time, no one touches the shoes.
Yeah, so nobody cares about my shoes. I'll find my shoes later.
Right.
He knows, I should put these in the backpack, because the backpack will get stolen. There's a good chance the backpack will get stolen.
Yep.
So I like this that the suit is all baggy. Yeah. This is one of those things I like on paper because what's the one thing we've all talked about in all the Spider-Man movies is how the fuck did he put together that clearly really expensive suit?
Yes.
I like that we segue. Tony Stark made it. I like that. I would have been fine if we left it at that.
Yeah.
Box just fell. And I like that it's all baggy and he hits the button and it tightens up. It's like, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, and the Ramones start playing because this movie is very in touch with the youths and what they're into.
John Watts apparently made the entire junior cast watch any marathon of John Hughes movies to prepare for this. And I was like, that's nice. When is it a John Hughes movie?
Yes.
And what does a John Hughes movie have to do with any teenager today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm an English teacher. I taught in schools. It's not the same. It's not one-to-one anymore. John Hughes movies are not like timeless.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also this movie's filled with so much like Britpop. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
what?
And it's like British invasion Britpop. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's fine. My only problem with it is it never seems to coincide with like what's actually happening. Like, it's just there. It's just wallpaper.
No. No. Like, remember in Civil War when Left Hand Free played to cue up Spider-Man?
Yeah.
And, like, that was really cool and and relevant?
Yeah.
And then yes. Homecoming comes and it's just what John Watts listened to in his bedroom in high school.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not that. Like, this is not What's Up Danger. This is not the same thing, man.
Yeah, it is not. So, and we get a day in the life of a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, which is a delightfully low-key scene. He stops Agreed. A bike thief. He gives an old woman directions. He keeps yep. a guy from stealing his own car. and which that scene, of course, leads to our Stan Lee cameo.
Yep.
And there's a couple times in this movie where I stop and my note is like, is this the best scene in the movie? This is one right? of those. This is one of those scenes because it's like, yeah, I like this little moment. We also get the actor I mentioned before from Shang-Chi, Zach Cherry, who asked him to do a flip. Great.
He's so great. Do a flip.
Peter calls Happy to update him. I think we utilize Happy a little too much in these movies, but this moment where he's like, a lady gave me a churro, it's like, oh, it's cute.
Yeah. There's also that shot of him, that shot of the sun setting against New York and him on the scaffolding with his mask up eating yes. lunch is a comic book panel come to yep. life. And like, this movie is choked with those and not yep. not in a suffocating way, in a way that like is a celebration.
Yep.
For me, I'm like, yeah. yes, 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 you did it. Like, what a triumph. Way to go.
And so now we get to another one of my, like, wait, is this the best scene in the movie? So
right.
Peter comes across an ATM robbery with a bunch of guys in Avengers masks using Tomb's text. And yep. I like the idea that the Tomb's and his thieves are stealing tech from, like, Chitauri and Ultron. I think that's great. All those little nods, the idea of, like, moving Avengers Tower and those little nods was great. This actually might be my favorite use of, like, listen, I like crime movies. A big part of crime movies is a bunch of dipshits in plastic masks. And I like, yeah, it'd be the Avengers. It provides an organic way for Spider-Man to do a bunch of quips. Like, he talks about not having met Thor or Hulk yet.
Yep.
It's great.
The quips, I think, were better in the trailer. It's a completely different scene from the trailer to this scene.
Yeah.
You know, where
I don't remember I don't remember the trailer quips.
In the trailer when he says, you guys aren't the real Avengers. I know Hulk gives it away. Like, it's just... Yeah,
I remember that. That is a good one.
I like that a lot better than this one. It felt really, I don't know, felt very 80-yard. Also, when he's, like, suspended in the air, despite, like, the attention to detail is amazing in this movie. Like, people at the seat, like, from the visual defects department, they're like, okay, well, no, like, he sticks to the floor, so it needs to pull the floor up along with his adhesion, and yeah. I'm like, that's awesome. It's too bad he looks like a cartoon character.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that's a little like, the joke doesn't click for me is when the bodega guy is like, oh, Spider-Man's fighting
Avengers. The Avengers.
Like, that's not what you would say. Because you...
Well, he says,
are you
like,
in on the bit? Like, well, what do you...
for me, he's just saying, he's just like, well, can you describe what you're seeing?
Yeah.
Spider-Man's fighting the Avengers.
And so...
I like that a lot. I like that moment, but I get it. I hear you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the goons aren't good with the tech. Little out of their pay grade.
Which is a great, like, indication of why, you know, Spider-Man needs to stop.
Yes, why this is a hazard. And I do have questions about how they're just robbing ATMs. Where'd you get the money for the space gun? But what, you know, whatever.
I'm assuming they're just their friend rates. You know, like you're Adrian Toomes, you're selling Chitauri Tech. You don't know what the street value is on power generators and anti-grav guns. Like, so you're just charging the same amount you charge for like an Uzi or an assault rifle.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And they straight up fucking cut the bodega in half. And the bodega guy's lucky he also was not cut in half. His cat's safe too.
Cat's
safe
too. It's so cute. I love that cat. It's so fat and fluffy.
It's such a flat. Fluffy cat. I don't know if I want it right there where they're making the sandwiches. I have a cat. I don't necessarily want to run my food prep area.
My house is covered in cat hair, and I vacuum twice a day. And but I will also say, accurate.
yeah.
Bodega cats are a real thing, so get used to cat hair.
Well, and of course, I got to mention from Spider-Man Miles Morales, the game, Spider Cat, which is the greatest.
Spider Cat.
But it's just great. It's just the greatest.
Yeah.
So Peter calls. We see Happy. He's packing up Avenger Tower.
Yeah. What the hell? Can we talk about Avengers Tower for a second? And this like weird lead burying they're doing on this freaking tower. First of all I've wanted for 4 years, not 8 years, is to see Spider-Man go to Avengers Tower. There's a poster of Spider-Man on Avengers Tower. There's a fake post-credit scene somebody made with CG of Spider-Man on Avengers Tower. This is the movie where Spider-Man joins the MCU officially, and we're getting rid of Avengers Tower?
Yeah, and it's
what?
And we have spent 4 years now.
Yeah.
Wait, there's the distance between Avengers and Spider-Man Homecoming is the distance from now to Spider-Man Homecoming. That's
oh
wild.
My God.
So we've spent 4 years now. It feels like a lifetime, probably because of COVID.
Yep.
So we've spent 4 years now. Well, who bought Avengers Tower? We still don't fucking know.
We still don't know who bought it. And, like, I don't think they do either.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They for sure do not. People, especially at this age, we'd like to... I think maybe that 8 years was the first crack. And like, wait, maybe they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So anyway, Peter sneaks in his room, not realizing that Ned is there, which... The scene is shot very well. I don't know how the person crawling on the ceiling doesn't notice there's a not small person sitting on his bed.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. But I was like, I remember watching it and being like, and knowing that Ned's in it and being like, this is really well shot.
Mm-hmm. So Peter tells Ned to keep a secret. Ned admits that that's probably not going to happen. And here's the Uncle Ben nod when Peter says, with everything that happened to her, referring to Aunt May, please don't tell it.
Yeah.
And which is great. I have confusions now, two more movies later, but at the time I was like, oh, cool.
Yep. Yeah. No, we get it. Like we get it.
This might be a good opportunity to ask you your thoughts on Ned, on the Genki of it all. Because I like the actor's name is Jacob Batalon, correct?
Yeah.
Batalon. I like Jacob Batalon. I like him in the role. I have mixed feelings on his inclusion.
Right. They need him. It's actually funny because like I think Karen's invention is to preserve the like inner monologue nature of Spider-Man. Like, so that he has speech bubbles in the movie, but Ned is also there to do that. And
yes, this Peter Parker needs a lot of hand holding. He always
does.
Needs somebody to tell him where to go and what to do.
Yeah. I fundamentally don't, I like the idea of Peter having no friends, or at the very least of his friends being rare or like, you know, forged in fire,
time.
But at the same time, Genki is a great character in the Miles universe, and he provides such a terrific role for Miles in that universe. And Into the Spider-Verse has proven you don't really need Genki. Mm-hmm. Like, Miles is a strong enough character on his own. And so what do you do with him? I like their interaction, their friendship, their relationship, especially because, like, they're both losers, and they both, like, neither of them have friends of their own.
Yeah.
And I think it's unbelievable for, you know, everybody talks about like Peter's a huge loser, and I'm like, Peter has hooked up with no fewer than a dozen beautiful women.
Yeah,
he is
drop
no
dead
loser.
Gorgeous women.
Yeah, yeah. Like I
and
align,
also
yeah,
and also every one of his movies, he's played by get this a movie star,
right?
And
a movie star who is beautiful, and it's like so I don't believe that this Peter Parker would not have a friend.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of him having a friend to bounce these ideas off of, especially now in the wake of No Way Home.
Yeah, yes, yes. I think when I look on this, because I'm like you, I think I like Spider-Man feeling isolated. I think my other issue is one of the things that makes Spider-Man, I think, if not the one of the greatest comic book characters of all time, is his supporting cast. And I think one of the issues is with the impetus behind Homecoming is the creators behind it clearly haven't heard of If It Ain't Broke, Don't Fix It.
Right.
Because they just went in like, let's change everything. And so they, you know, that supporting cast, that great supporting cast he has, throw it in the trash. We're going to create a new one.
Right. And, or we're going to weirdly cast different people. Like, for some reason, they had this like weird bug up their ass about doing like, okay, Betty Brant played by Gwen Stacy.
Yes.
Mary Jane played by Michelle Jones.
Ned Leeds, Ganky.
You know, like, what is happening? And there are so many characters in this movie where that is what they did, and I'm like, why did you do that?
Yeah, and I think in watching this movie again, I think, and again, no offense to Jake Batalon, I think he's really great. What I would have done as for, I guess, because of the things that I like about the character, I would have subbed Michelle in. I would have either picked Elaine. She's either Michelle or MJ. We'll get into that in a minute.
Right.
But subbed her for the story we're telling. It would have been similar to the way Gwen was utilized in The Spectacular Spider-Man, where they're friends and she has feelings, but he's too much of a dipshit to be clued into that.
It's all they needed to do.
And it would have helped. It would have made the MCU, I feel like, overall, better now. Phase 4 has done a better job with this. Has not done great with its female characters, and I think there's very few better examples of that than the Spider-Man movies. These Spider-Man movies, because of the way they treat Aunt May and MJ, which gets better as it goes on. But here, it's like women are love interests. That's all they can work with.
It's interesting. I don't know if it's because Marissa Tomei is so excellent, or if it's because they just let her, like they gave her the room, but like, she's so good in this movie, and there's so much there that is not said or shown. Like, this, that's not said.
Yeah.
I know people are like, yeah, Marissa Tomei, like, why is she, like, she's so hot and young, and that's all they did. There's a lot in there. Like, there's a lot in her character where she is, like, she knows the backstory. A lot of these characters, like, don't know. You know, like, it's like Ned doesn't know that Uncle Ben died or something in that scene. But, like, Aunt May / Marissa Tomei knows all the stuff that's happening in these scenes, and like, she is so good at like portraying this woman who is possibly a widower.
Yeah.
And we don't know, and neither did they. So they're like, we don't know, just play it however. And so she does. And she's like, she's experienced tragedy, and she's trying to make this work. This isn't my son, but he is my son.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to give him boundaries. Cause like, I'm like, you know, maybe when I got him, I was 25, you know, like I was not young, I was not old enough to raise a kid, and I did anyway, and I made it work, and I'm living my life. She's so good. And this movie just helped to reinforce, like, I don't think Aunt May is a weak character in these movies. I think she's incredible, and I don't think it's because of the writing, but I do think that at the very least, the director gets out of Marissa Tomei's way, or he's really good and he's giving her really good direction. I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, I think Marissa Tomei does a lot with what she's given. I do wish she was given the opportunity earlier to be the emotional anchor that Rosemary Harris and Sally Field were in those movies. Because I think she could have... Because we don't get that with Aunt May, because we sort of give it to Tony Stark. We'll get into that a little bit.
We needed at least one scene. Because the scene of her preparing she steals the show.
Yeah.
We needed the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently there was a scene that was cut that like, whatever, that like she helps a kid or something. And we see that like Peter gets some of his heroic stuff from her. But you're right. Watching this again, the moment she's given, it's like, oh, there is something here. And I do think it's Marissa Tomei that's bringing it. Whatever. So, speaking of which, Peter goes with May to get Ty. They have a long conversation about LARB. We do find out that May doesn't like Stark, which tracks. We find out he asks for a new backpack. We find out he's lost 5 this year. The one overriding thing we get from May in this movie is she is chill as fuck.
she's very chill.
She's very chill. LARB, Ty guy gives them, hot sticky rice. Ha 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 ha. Now we get a little moment. We go back to school. Ned's asking Peter about all this. Like, do you have all this these spider abilities? We find out the spider is dead.
Yep. I love that line. I'm like, hey, we know.
It's not coming back.
Yeah.
And then we get Hannibal Buress. Oh, this is another fun moment. We get Hannibal Buress showing the Captain America gym video. And I like his little, like, I think this guy might be a war criminal now, but I'm required by the state to play these.
Yeah, and that kind of plays up in No Way Home, where he's also like he hates superheroes and he's a conspiracy theorist or some nonsense. It's fun.
That scene where we got the three famous teachers from these movies to just stand there, and they're clearly not on the same soundstage as Tom Holland.
Yeah, and they're just like, goodbye.
Yeah,
we are no longer in the film. Yeah. But I like that Cap scene. Every Cap moment in this is phenomenal.
It's fun. And again, it's another just smart use of like, yeah, that makes sense. That would probably be a thing in this universe. Sure.
It's really cool that they got, and I love that he's wearing the Avengers suit, because it's like, after the first Avengers movie, they're like, Cap, we need you like to help make these stupid infomercials. He's like, okay, I'll help you with that.
Yes.
And because after that, like, you know, he doesn't wear that suit anymore. Chris Evans famously hates that suit and doesn't want to wear it ever. So I love seeing him in it.
I like that suit from the neck down.
Yeah. It's okay.
The helmet situation, we really dialed in the suit by the time we got to Endgame. It's like, this is the suit. This is what we're dealing. Yeah.
Well, Captain America, what was it? Was it Civil War, where he just goes back to the Smithsonian and grabs the one he wore in World War II? And
I'm like,
that's the better suit.
Peter and Ned, when they're in the gym, we get some in the gym class. We get some cool moments. We see that Michelle is working out by lifting her book.
What a real high school moment. I remember kids doing this.
Yeah, and then I also like the moment where the gym teacher notices Peter's doing really good on the sit-ups. He's like, good job. And then Peter, like, this is a very Spider-Man moment of like, oh.
Yeah.
And he has to like slow down. Like, I'm still a nerd, a weak nerd. That's the bit I'm
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. Like, he's effortlessly doing sit-ups. And he's like, dude, this is a far contrast to slam dunking and shattering the backboard.
Yes. Yes. They overhear Michelle talking with the other girl. No, excuse me. Sorry, Liz. They overhear Liz talking about the other girls about superheroes, and she mentions that she kind of has a thing for Spider-Man. Yep. And this is where it's a bad that Ned knows. The one thing I do like, when they first like, oh, he's got a friend and he's in on him, I'm like, that's not Spider-Man. Spider-Man's supposed to be isolated. I do like that Ned knowing is a hurdle. Like, Ned knowing is a problem. It's not like, it doesn't make Peter's life easier.
No, exactly. This is not, this doesn't take the burden off.
Yeah.
I got to deal with this now.
Yeah, I got to do this, and I can't fucking kill Ned. No, I can't do it. I can't do it. Ned blurts out that he knows Spider-Man. God damn it, Ned. And Flash teases him over, of course. He says that Peter should invite Spider-Man to Liz's party, which is, this is how Peter finds out about Liz's party. Although she seems cool about it. She's like, yeah, come. Liz seems cool.
Yeah, exactly. Liz is cool and chill, and I like her more in this like rewatch, where I'm like, this chick is like pretty cool with everything. Like, she's rolling with the popular people, but she's also like, she's a senior.
Yeah.
And she's at that point in senior year where she's like, oh right, like none of this matters. So, yeah, I'll hang out with the sophomore.
Yeah. It is weird. It's interesting, Peter, like, so what is he? We've said he's a sophomore?
Yeah,
is he a sophomore?
He's a sophomore.
Here?
He's 15 in this movie.
He's in this senior girl. And it's like, yeah, that's not going to happen, my guy. Anyway.
Nah, I mean, it does, but like, no, man, no.
Meanwhile, all the adult Avengers are dating women 10 to 15 years younger than them. So, cool May scene. May drops Peter and Ned off at Liz's party. Very pumps Ned up. Good energy from May. I like Ned's little, like, the hat gives me confidence.
I love him wearing that hat. That's such a high school thing where it's like,
it is.
I wear this dumb hat.
Oh, I have some stupid hats in my past. I have some stupid hats in my past.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very thankful that, like, the fedora was not a thing.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, it had come and gone. I don't know. I don't remember. I remember not being attracted. I remember liking fedoras, like finding them cool on suits in people in movies.
Yes.
And being like, I can't just wear one. I got to have a suit that matches. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's never going to happen. So that's the end of it.
Yeah, that's the end of that. That's the end of the road. So Flash is the DJ at the party, because of course he is. At first, Peter's not going to do it. He says Spider-Man's not a party trick. And then Flash teases him, and then he's going to do it.
It's so great. I like that. I think that's so cute. Like, it was such a great Spider-Man moment. Spider-Man's not a party trick. It's a responsibility. And then it's like,
and they make fun of him. All right,
but I'm 15.
Exactly. It is a testament to Peter's fortitude that he didn't immediately tell everybody he's fucking Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a kid who grew up like alone, and he had a family. Like he's experienced tragedy. Like this guy knows like to keep his shit together.
We gave Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire Spider-Man a lot of shit for some of the decisions they made because for the most part those versions of Spider-Man were adults, and this one, you know, it's clearly a kid, and it's like, you know, good on you for not just like being more like Ned and just blurting it out to everybody,
right? Because he would have done it immediately. Exactly.
Yes. Like, as he's getting dressed as Spider-Man to go in, he sees an explosion, and this is some comic book timing right here. This is I've gone back and started like rewatching Batman Beyond, and there's so much of like, I just happened to be in the area when this thing went down.
Yeah, I was doing teenage stuff over here, and supervillain stuff happened in the same area, so now
wild. I'm involved. Another good sequence. Spider-Man goes to swing to it, but he's in the suburbs, so there's nothing to swing on.
I was like, oh my god, that's Thy Commuter Cometh, like Peter David story. I'm like, that's amazing. It's also, we're still in New York. Like, yes. I remember complaining like a while ago where I'm like, man, I wish the Spider-Man movies like took place in New York. And I'm like, this movie, 90% of it is in New York.
Yes. Like, and again, I do, when we'll get into this, at this point in the movie, we're very much in the part that I think really works, at least works for me.
Yeah.
And I like changes like this, I think work. We'll get into later. I do kind of wish when we get to the Washington Monument, it feels like a more dialed-in movie would have seen that we're building to him doing skyscrapers in New York and then it doesn't do anything with it.
Right.
Which I think is a problem of these movies where it's like we set something up that then we don't... Because it's not... We're not telling a story. We're throwing... Like a lot of modern blockbusters, we're just throwing a bunch of ideas at you.
Yeah.
And then leaving.
Well, it's so weird. Like, just the fact that they were like... Let's put 6 Spider-Man villains in this movie.
Yeah, and it's also, it's weird rewatching it because I know, and I still think for the most part it works, and it definitely works better than Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man 3, the amount of villains. But it's also interesting rewatching how utterly superfluous they are. The Shockers don't do anything for the movie.
They don't do anything. There's no need to do that. Yeah. The Tinkerer, I was like, I can't believe the Tinkerer's in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't believe they put Tinkerer in a movie. Way to go.
Yes.
But, you know, then there's Scorpion is in this movie for, like, a few seconds.
Yeah, for a few seconds, which I thought we would have paid that off a little bit sooner than
everybody wants to pay that off. I'm like, I don't think that actor is big enough to put into a headlining Spider-Man movie.
Which is a bummer. He's in Better Call Saul. He's really great in that show. I actually like the actor a lot. He played a brief role on Orphan Black. He's really good.
Right, and he's a good character actor, and he'd be a great Scorpion, but, like, you can't headline a Spider-Man movie with... a great character actor. Like,
that's a bummer.
Paul Giamatti proved you can't just have a character actor in your movie.
And that guy was an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's true.
So he has to run. He literally has to hoof it over to where the explosion is. He goes there, and a character whose name is Jackson, which every time I had to write his name, I had to look it up. He's Shocker One, is trying to sell Childish Gambino a gun made from an Ultron arm. And I love this line from Donald Glover. Listen, man, I'm just trying to stick somebody up. I'm not trying to blast them back in time.
No, Donald Glover is amazing in this movie. It's really understated. Like, he's, you know, it's easy to just be like, he really slept walk through this movie, but like, he's playing a character from Queens. Like, he's playing a dude from Queens who robs people.
Yes.
And it's like, yep,
I still want a Donald Glover Prowler movie, but
I can't believe, I'm like, also he's Aaron Davis and he's Prowler in this movie, and I'm like, wow. First of all, Aaron Davis is ultimate Prowler, not Hobie Brown. Miss you. But hey, listen, like, it's Donald Glover. He didn't sign on without signing a contract for 3 movies. So is Prowler?
Where is Prowler? Here's my Prowler pitch. Aaron Davis, low-level crook, but he's shown some promise. So Hobie Brown, who's who is the original Prowler, you get like a Will Smith. You get like big boy to play original Prowler. He mentors him. It's a heist movie with the two Prowlers. Of course, Hobie Smith probably betrays Aaron Davis, something like that. Lay the seeds for Miles. Anyway, that's my Prowler pitch. We're going to move on.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
Sony, call me up. Spider-Man's cell phone goes off. Peter's cell phone goes off. They're about to shoot Donald Glover. Love this. This might actually be my favorite moment in the movie. Spidey jumps down and is like, "Hey, if you're going to shoot somebody, I'm Spider-Man. Shoot me."
Yeah,
love
exactly.
It. Rock solid Spider-Man moment. Jackson clocks Spider-Man with a special glove, which is interesting that that's the direction we went with Shocker. That it's now power glove. Sure.
Yeah.
Nobody. Yeah. I like Shocker because he's a great, like, in the animated series, like, oh, we're doing Venom. What's a throwaway villain we can throw at Spider-Man? Shocker. Yep. Any Spider-Man game, what's like a one-off, no-name villain we can throw? Shocker. Spider-Man. Like, he's that guy.
Yeah.
So I like Shocker, but whatever. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
No, it's cool they did Shocker. It's and the Herman version wears a Shocker costume.
Yeah, and also, Bokeem Woodbine is so amazing. He's in the second season. I think it's the second season of Fargo. He's also in the new Ghostbusters, completely wasted in that movie. Bokeem Woodbine is a really terrific actor, so it's like, hey, bring him back. Bring him back. Anyway.
Yeah.
But that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about Logan Marshall Green as Jackson. Yeah, so, I lost my notes. Here we go. Jackson clocks Spidey with the glove. The Shockers drive off, but Spider-Man like weblines it, and they start dragging him through the suburbs.
Yep.
They lose him for a second, and Spidey tries to chase him through the backyards. And in case there was any mystery of what movie we're referencing, one of the lot of house parties going on, by the way, on this particular night in wherever they're in, part of New York.
I guess they're in, well, not Queens, Forest Hills, maybe. I don't know.
And one of the parties is playing Ferris Bueller, and Peter says, great movie. And I've got to be honest with you, it is a great movie. I have questions about Peter's movie knowledge, because in Civil War, he was like, oh, remember that ancient movie, Empire Strikes Back? But he's also seen Ferris Bueller. It's like, you seem more hip to this stuff. Whatever.
He is a movie buff who also like doesn't know the word for AT-ATs. I'm like, you are full of it. Like, are you trying to look cool in front of Ant-Man? Because it's not working.
It's not working.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is fun. They're doing the tracking shot. I'm like, this is great. And then they showed that they're watching Ferris Bueller. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Don't need to do that. We get it. The kids get it. So finally, this is cool. Spider-Man finally catches up with him. He's about to jump on the van, and then Vulture clocks his ass and drags him up into space. I guess the Vulture costume doesn't have the freezing problem the Iron Man costume did. And his chute, is there something that activated the chute? Was it just the amount of height?
I think it's just the amount of altitude. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, props to this movie for actually doing the like chonky round spider on the back.
That is, like, the biggest sin is losing that after every other version of the Spider-Man costume. That's my Spider-Man back, is the chunky boy spider on the back.
Yeah, and I also feel like I just saw art, I think it was Paolo Rivera, one of those artists that did a version of it that made it look even more like a circle. It looked really rad, and it's like, yeah, we should do this more. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
So it activates a parachute. The parachute yanks him away from Vulture, and he just plummets into the water. And I understand that he is supposed to have spider powers, but I think that's a dead boy. I think that's a broken neck. The amount of punishment Spider-Man can or cannot take, this is always the case, but it is also true in this movie, is very plot dependent.
Totally. Yeah. He gets hit by a bullet train in the next movie.
And then some rocks fall on him later, and he really struggles with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Iron Man, air quotes, yanks him out of the water. And Stark's not actually there. It's a remote pilot suit. He's in like India or something.
India? Yeah.
And he tells Spider-Man he wants him to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I'm sure this will be thematically relevant, not haphazardly deployed throughout the movie.
No, probably not.
Stark does mention the woman, because he told Happy, woman gave me a churro. Stark mentions it here. And I do
so
have
he's
questions.
He's getting the reports.
Yeah,
like,
I have questions about their
them.
Level of involvement, because it seems like they don't give a shit, but then he is paying attention to the reports.
Yeah.
Stark also mentions that he has pull at MIT.
Yep.
Too bad he's fucking dead by the time they need it.
I really could have used that letter. You didn't write that letter of recommendation early, man? Come on.
No, Tony doesn't think ahead on stuff. Ned calls him. Spidey comes across. He goes back to the scene of crime, comes across a piece of alien tech, just puts it in his pocket. And Ned calls, and Flash is leading a chant of Penis Parker at the party.
I love Ned goes, the hat's not working, Peter.
That's not working. He goes back to it, though. He doesn't give up on the hat. He returns to the hat later in the movie.
He does keep using that hat,
Back at the villainous lair, Vulture returns to the lair pissed, and Tinker mentions the big one. He's going to mention this throughout. Vulture's not having it. He's like, no, I don't want to do the big one. Jackson and Schultz return, and Vulture makes fun of Jackson calling himself the Shocker.
Yep. A little much.
Vulture kicks Jackson off the crew, and Jackson threatens to out him, clearly not realizing the organization he is. I do love this moment where Vulture grabs one of the guns and incinerates him, and he thinks it's like a, he's like, wait, I thought that was the gravity gun. It's like, that's cool. The anti-gravity gun.
Yeah, I like that a lot. He's like, and I love that. That's kind of like a almost like a character moment for him where he's like, I'm not a murderer. Yeah. Like, I'm not a crazy psycho. And he blew this guy up, and he's like, that was surprisingly easy. And I will continue to do this from now on.
Yeah, I guess the rails are off now. Anything goes.
Yeah.
And then he gives Schultz the gauntlet. He says, you're the shocker now.
Yeah.
So Peter is just whacking that alien gym with a hammer in shop class. And I sure do hope that nobody in this movie intends to have kids later on, because they're just handling glowy alien stuff haphazardly.
Oh yeah, the very accurate portrayal of a shop teacher though.
Yeah, keep your hands clear. And Schultz shows up.
Yeah.
At Peter's school looking for him. This might have been a more opportune time to throw in the school bus fight, but whatever. I don't need to backseat quarterback this movie. Peter follows Schultz and the other guy to the shop room, and of course it's there tracking them. I do want to mention, when they go in the shop room, I don't know if you saw this out, but there was a giant pillar of faces. And I don't know why is that there? Who built it? What is the context of the pillar of faces?
I don't know.
It's a mystery that will never be solved.
No, I don't get it. I mean, like, the mural I get, and I like the callbacks, like Erskine's on there and Howard Stark's on there, but like the pillar, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Hey, well, cool. I just didn't know if it was something I missed. So Peter hits Schultz with the spider tracer, which is amazing. However, I do kind of wish it looked more like the one in the comics.
Me too, which is a little fat little spider guy.
Whatever. Yeah,
but it's Stark tech. Like Peter presumably didn't invent it. He doesn't use, say, spider sense to track it anyway.
Yeah.
But hopefully, maybe in the future, he'll do that. Where he's like, you know, I reverse engineered the idea that Stark had, and I tuned it with my extrasensory perception, which no one in any Spider-Man movie yet has called a spider sense.
Yes. It's better than calling it, as the Morbius trailers do, bat radar.
Bat radar! I love that. You mean sonar.
Yeah, you mean sonar is what you're talking about, but whatever.
He's got some kind of
some
bat
kind
radar.
Of bat radar. Oh, my God.
Spectacular.
So I do kind of wish, I feel like this would have been a great movie to do that, where like Tony gives him the suit and it's just a suit, and then he reverse engineers a lot of gadgets, because he uses a lot of cool Spider-Man gadgets that were just given to him that I guess Tony invented in the afternoon after he saw, he took one look at Spider-Man like, I got all this stuff
easily
handled.
Yeah, no, I buy that like Tony was in the shop or wherever and he's watching YouTube and he comes across the spider thing and it's like, nah. And he doesn't immediately know how they did it, so he investigates it further. Mm-hmm. He looks up reports. You know, he uses his Jarvis tech to just invade everyone's privacy. Finds out it's not fake. Then goes in and goes like, "Well, I mean, like, if I owned Spider-Man, I'd probably do this." That just, he can't help himself. It's one of those things where it's like, "I'm up at 4 a.m. I'm going to make 16 Iron Man suits." It's, I can't help myself. I'm obsessive. I invented time travel because I couldn't sleep. So like now I'm gonna upgrade Spider-Man.
Solid point. He did invent time travel in a later movie.
Right.
So he spider traces Schultz. They track it to Maryland. Ned wears the Spider-Man mask in this
Cute. I love him wearing it.
And this is, Peter decides to rejoin the academic decathlon because it's going to be in DC, which is close to Maryland.
Yep.
And Michelle mentions wanting to protest at the Capitol because at this point she's kind of mostly just a sketch. She's just a loose sketch of a human being.
That's right.
And I am referring her to her as Michelle at this point, because that is who she is at this point. So on the ride to DC, we see a little like a roadside sign that mentions the Triskelion cleanup. Happy calls Peter because he sees that he left New York, which again, it's like, how involved are you guys in the Peter situation? Because he was texting you 2 months, nothing.
Yeah.
Now you're like dialed in. I'm confused.
Well, it's literally just like, well, you're within this borough. You don't leave. Tony probably has like a little like you have two monitors, you have all these like apps. He has a Peter app that's just like, if he leaves the five boroughs, I get a beep.
Yeah, dude, this is like some Batman shit where we find out like Tony literally has a tracker in like literally every Avenger, Captain America, everything.
He made all their suits.
Oh man, that must be a deleted scene in Civil War. Anyway.
Yeah, where's that?
So at the hotel, Peter and Ned remove the tracker in Peter's suit. This is the first time we get a little look at the inside, which, of course, we get a better look at in No Way Home.
It's cold and black. They did it. Like, they actually noticed. I was like, holy crap. Now, that being said, I am convinced that the suit in No Way Home that he wears to, like, deal with multiversal threats was originally a magic suit. There's no way you can convince me it was going to be inside out. But the fact that Stark spider suits are gold and black on the inside is kind of a cool throwback. Way to go.
Ned, because, again, every high schooler in Queens is a super genius. Ned sees there's a bunch of systems blocked by what's called the training wheels protocol. I do like that Peter protests the training wheels protocol by jumping on a bed.
By jumping on a bed like an indolent child. Yeah, I love it. It's great.
He gets Ned to remove the training wheels protocol, and he appeals to Ned's dream of being the guy in the chair, because it doesn't matter what universe you're in. Every Peter is a little bit of an asshole. Yeah. Just a little bit of an asshole.
Right?
Little bit manipulative.
Yeah.
Peter makes Ned keep the glowing thing.
Yep.
Oh, man. Peter, listen, you got bit by a radioactive spider. You're probably going to be fine. Don't just go handing out glowy rocks to your friends.
No. I mean, he screws up a lot in this movie, and I love it. Like, I'm there for it. Like, I'm like, wow, he screws up, and he tries to make it right, but he goes and fixes his own problems. And I'm like, that's really cool. Like, this is but one of many screw-ups in his life and in this movie that he does.
So Peter goes to sneak out, and he finds out that the others sneak out with Liz, and Liz invites them to go to the pool.
Go to the pool, Peter.
And he's like, I need to study. And she's like, oh, you're the smartest guy I know. And we find out how important the decathlon is to Liz and the one-bed characterization she gets.
Yep.
However, in a very Spider-Man moment, he does not go to the pool. He suits up as Spider-Man.
Yep.
And when he puts on the suit, now that the training wheel protocols start, that's when the AI activates.
Yes.
And for me, this is where the movie starts to, it's like, oh... I don't like this. So the AI literally gives Peter a step-by-step guide how to get, like, literally telling him, like, when to jump off the vehicle that he's on. And this leads to a gas station where Tinker and Shocker and some other dude I don't care about are lying in wait. And the suit offers Spider-Man an enhanced combat mode, which activates instant kill mode.
Yeah.
Why? Why is that in there?
because Tony has no problem murdering people, and he assumes everyone's like him. I thought that was a cute moment when it's like activating his kill mode. He's like, no, what? Yeah,
don't do that. I'm going to use that on aliens later.
Yeah, I had a huge problem with him using instant kill mode in the Infinity in Endgame, despite it being played for laughs and it being kind of a fun callback. Like, I'm like, that's a fun callback. Peter would never use instant kill anything on anybody, although he is using it on those, like, Outriders, so it's like they're dogs.
As far as we're like their dogs. Cut to a scene where they're like having coffee in the break room and they're talking about their kids and shit.
Exactly. They're robots, Morty. It's okay to kill them. I wonder if, like, it'd be great to see it go completely off the rails. Like, Karen's like, let's do this.
And
he, like, goes after Ebony Maw and just starts stabbing him in the face, like, repeatedly.
We're gonna get into it. Karen is a full on AI with a personality and wants and needs and goals.
I don't care for how hot Karen is. why am I sexually interested in Karen? Don't make me horny for Karen. That
it's Jennifer Connelly doing
it
the
voice.
It
is Jennifer Connelly. She is the most gorgeous woman in the universe, including my wife, of course.
And she's also Paul Bettany's wife, so it's a little callback to that.
Right, but she's way too hot. Like, she's like sultrily talking to him. She's like, if I did, you know, I wouldn't be embarrassed. I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? And you've got a haptic suit. Like, here we go. Like, I don't know.
You're like, Liz, I'm sorry, I found somebody.
And she's all suit. Around me.
Literally. Yeah. So anyway, Spidey falls on his face because in combat mode, he gets little web balls.
Yep.
And again, I kind of wish Peter had invented his own web gadgets and not
Stark. At the same time, like, he didn't even have gadgets until Ben Reilly. Like, literally, it was three settings of webbing, and that's it. You know, Ben thought, oh, I'll make him into impact webbing. Like, that's when we get to, like, video game level Spider-Man, like, taser webs and stuff.
Yes.
I like the idea of him using this, like, of Stark being like, oh, of Stark overdoing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it trips him up. He's like, if I don't have just regular webs, I am less effective as Spider-Man.
Yeah. But I think, again, for me, the part of the issue is that this sequence then becomes, in a way, more about Tony Stark than about Peter. And I have had three movies of Tony Stark. I want to know more about the Peter in this universe. Like, what we've gotten multiple movies of Peter, but not this Peter. So anyway, you're right. It does, it, like the Ned thing, this seems like a positive thing, but it's actually tripping him up.
Yeah.
So the truck that they're targeting rolls by. Vulture flies up. He uses this cool portal cube tech that we saw established earlier with Tinkerer. And I think they call it a phase shift disruptor or something like that.
Phase matter shifter.
Yeah. Sure. So Vulture drops in and steals stuff, which is then, when he comes out, was grabbed by Spider-Man.
Yep.
His web settings are still off, so he doesn't like shoots two lines away from Vulture. And he falls in, knocks one of the phase shifter cubes in with him. And so when he goes to jump out, he fucking clocks his head on the thing, which again... Yeah. I think he would have died in the water. If that gave him a concussion, I think he would have died in the falling water. that's all I'm saying.
Probably.
So Peter wakes up, busts out of the truck, and he's in an empty warehouse. And this is, empty of people.
A cavernous warehouse.
A cavernous warehouse. Perfect. And this, we find out this is like a damage control vault for, like, this is basically where they store the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is where Spidey bonds with Suit Lady. Well, he's killing time in the warehouse. It's cool that we're spending time giving Suit Lady characterization instead of any of our other female leads.
Or any human being.
Whatever. Names her Karen because
I don't know why. It's not relevant to anything. It's weird that he didn't pick any character from like his long history of being Spider-Man from the comics.
Yeah,
I don't know why he picks Karen.
Karen, so, it's kind of, if this movie were made like 2 years later, it's like, well, let's not do Karen.
Let's not do Karen. That's kind of a meme-y, inappropriate name.
Yeah.
You don't want, whatever. So they did that.
So Spider-Man starts pulling stuff out from the truck, including an Ultron head, which is Ultron's not dead. Ultron, if their heads rolling around,
if there's
Ultron's
a head and it has light up eyes, it's not dead.
It would have been so funny if it started powering up and like a little bit of the void, and then he moves away and it shuts down again. You're like, oh fuck.
That I would have been way okay with that if he like accidentally almost triggered Ultron again.
Oh shit!
Or he's like, oh, I live, and he's like, oh no! It just turns it off.
He just flips the switch and like sets it back. That would have been great.
Oh my god! Yes.
So we didn't want to pay for James Spader to come back.
For What If, which is
If proved anything, it's his voice is not the easiest to mimic.
No, it's not. Yeah, no. Just pay the extra money and get James Spader. That's why you
just get James Spader. We find out that the glowy thing, because he finds another one in here, the glowy thing is functionally a bomb. And all it needs is literally the slightest bit of radiation and it will blow up.
Yeah.
So Spider spends the night. I do like this. Spider spends the night trying to unlock the door, going through all the stuff.
Got to use the TI-83 out calculator. Like, he is being spied. Like, the suit doesn't know what to do. It's like, I don't have Wi-Fi. And he's like, okay. And he's just, doing calculations.
Also, the little thing with him wearing the yellow decathlon jacket, it's like the way they promoted that movie is smart because it's like, it looks, it's a cool look. Yeah, it's a cool look for Spider-Man.
It's a great poster, too.
Yeah, putting jackets on Spider-Man just works for some reason.
I don't know why, but it does work. You know what? Because it's a form-fitting thing. It's like he's actually wearing clothes now.
Yeah. It's like putting a shirt on Donald Duck. It feels right.
Yeah.
At the decathlon, Michelle wins, they go to the Washington Monument after. And in the scanner, their backpacks, the glowy thing gets scanned and it's going to blow up. And it does. It shoots. Good thing it's directional and it just shoots off the top of the elevator.
Well, I guess because it's random, it's not like it just exploded. Maybe it penetrated some like element of its shielding here and here and not there and there.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
The only thing I like about that scene is that it does give a bit of characterization without telling, which is that Peter and Ned have ugly picture lock screen images of each other. Like both Ned and Peter have each other on their lock screens doing a like ugly picture of each other. And I'm like, really cute. Like what a fun real moment. Like what a thing I guess kids would do. I've never done that, but I'm not like 15.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't been for a minute now.
Exactly.
So to get to them, Spider-Man starts climbing the Washington Monument, and we learned that he's never been this high before. He gets a little bit of vertigo.
Yeah.
Which I don't know the measurements of skyscrapers in New York to the Washington Monument.
I would assume he's been higher than that, but like I would assume that the Empire State Building is higher than the Washington Monument, but maybe not.
Well, but again, I feel like, one, this is the idea of like the Spider-Man, I think it's like whatever issue 4 or 5 or whatever, when he fights the lizard, he goes to Florida. You know, Spider-Man travels, which is something we haven't gotten to see a lot.
Exactly.
The idea of having climbed the Washington Monument, cool.
Yes.
I do think it would have been cool if it's like, okay, we've established he's never been this high, so we're building up to him doing real Spider-Man shit on the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
That's not what we're doing.
Well, he does go higher, though. Like, we do see him because he's fighting Vulture. He's got to go up high.
Yeah, he fights on a plane. He fights on a plane.
He has to, so he does. Like, and that's that. And he's wearing the tracksuit. We'll get there, but yeah.
Also, that's right. He doesn't have his glider wings or anything like that.
Yeah, he's got nothing.
I do like the inclusion of those. The web wings.
which are comic accurate. I love them.
Exactly. Because it's like, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, I thought this would never happen.
Me too.
Because why would it? Where would it come in?
Yeah. I could see like Toby Spider-Man webbing his armpits and like makeshifting it. But
you can definitely see Sam Raimi when they were first designing the costume suggesting, can we? And they're like, no, that would look dumb. And he's like, okay. Okay, I won't.
All right, sorry, guys.
I'm sorry. So he climbs to the top. He needs to as he's climbing to the top, the security guard's like, everything's fine. And then Karen in his head is like, everything's not fine. A cop helicopter shows up with a sniper on it, which makes
where's the sniper coming from?
Like, I'm all for, like, I like that it's like the world versus Spider-Man. So like every time law enforcement's involved, they're all ready to shoot the shit out of Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is like, what did you think was happening here
to warrant
a sniper? Like,
right, like wheels up in 5 and get the sniper on the wing. Like, really? That fast? There were like 3 helicopters ready to go. I was like, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
But, you know, it adds attention to the scene, I guess. So, all right.
Yeah. So he uses the glider wings to glide over the helicopter, swing in, punch through the window he's supposed to get through, slides in, grabs the elevator. This is a pretty cool scene. Grabs the elevator, pulls him up, and gets everybody off. Last person, of course, the last person he gets off is Liz.
Yep.
And again, this is yeah, Karen is a full AI, and it's like, kiss her. This is your moment. And again, and again. I'm not a fan of Karen. I love Jennifer Connelly. Not a fan of Karen's inclusion in this movie. Right. So this scene doesn't work.
It's weird, like, callback. They're like, you're upside down. There's the girl. You're supposed to kiss her because that's what happened in Spider-Man, right? Like, that's the movie moment. And I'm like, all right, that's kind of fun. It's like a little fourth world. That's like a fourth wall breaking moment as opposed to an actual, like, moment in the movie. I don't know why it's there.
And again, like the moments that are movie moments that if you put them outside of the context, I don't know if they make sense. Peter falls into the mist and then Flash jumps on like, do you know Peter Parker? And it's like,
I kind of like that moment. I thought it was just because those are his priorities.
Yes, he needs to know. Even after Spider-Man might have fallen to his death. Hey.
Yeah, I mean, dude Peter saved Parker. The trophy first. Like,
He saved the trophy first. He saved himself first. I love Tony. We've had him on the show. Great guy, and he's great. He's great here. And I think there's no better spot for us to stop episode 1. Spider-Man takes DC. Sal.
Yeah.
Before we go, remind the kids at home where they can find you.
You can find me over at youtube.com/comicpop. Check us out. We're gonna have a good old time. We talk about Spider-Man sometimes.
Occasionally. Once or twice, probably.
Yeah, a lot.
If you are listening to this on Patreon, thank you to being a patron. If for some reason we drop this episode for free and you want to hear part 2 or you want to listen to our other Spider-Verse episodes, you can do that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash, and you can find Only Stupid Answers everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers. Thank you all. And please tune in for part 2. More vultures, more Iron Mans, and more plane fights. And we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.